Right now it is time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast it over the weekend and, of course, after our 12 noon as well. And Arthur talks about one of my favorite subjects and probably yours, cooking and food. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, and I have a lot to say today, too. I somehow missed talking about this, although I didn't miss the event. But a man named David Mintz passed away at age 89, just a few weeks short of his 90th birthday, at the end of February. And his obit appeared in the Times, I forget if it's March 6th, March 8th, March 8th, like that. And that's how I found out he died. David Mintz, and by the way, he got this amazing, wonderful obit in the Times written by Sam Roberts, who's an old friend of mine. He was the city editor at the Daily News when I was a features editor at the Daily News. Anyway, and Sam and I have kept in touch over the years. Sam is now, the lead obituary writer at the Times, and that's a really good job, even though it doesn't sound like it. Anyway, David Mintz is the inventor, or was the inventor, of tofutti. Have you ever tried tofutti, Marshall?
Yes, I had.
You have. I have not. Was it any good?
Let me put it this way. If you're a big, 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 big ice cream fan...
I am.
There's a difference. But I'm not. I was not a big fan of tofu, but I did think tofutti was all right. And then if you compare tofutti to some of the oat and other stuff, the stuff that they're putting on the market now, tofutti is like 500% better.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. So, but I date back to David Mintz, back to the early 1970s, before pre-tofutti. At that time, Dave, I only knew about, I lived here in Brooklyn on Albemarle Road and East 17th Street, and David had his Mintz's takeout store, Caterers. They called them then. Now we say takeout store. There were no takeout food stores then to speak of. And his was kosher. His store was on Church Avenue and East 18th Street, literally around the corner from where I lived. And you couldn't even walk down 17th Street to Church Avenue because it was a dead-end street. And I had to walk to the corner of 18th and then down the block, and there it was. So one day I'm in Mintz's. He sold prepared salads, and I don't really remember. But it was all kosher, and I'm thinking it had to be all dairy, or a dairy, because he was very observant, David Mintz. He grew up in a Lubavitch household, as a Hasidic household. He went to the Lubavitch yeshiva right down the street from me here on Eastern Parkway in Crown Heights. And he, in the end, well, maybe not in the end, maybe in the middle, I would say, of his life, was mentored by the rabbi, Menachem Schneerson, who today, many of the Rebbe's followers believe is the Messiah. But as a cab driver said to me a few years ago, well, if he was a Messiah, how come not everybody's loving each other now? So we were in the middle of some neighborhood strife, let's call it. Anyway, so David had this shop on Church Avenue. Apparently, now that I've read his obituary in the Times and an old piece written in the mid-'80s or early 80s by William Geist, who is the father of, his son is now better known than he ever was, I'm sure he's proud of that, Willie Geist, the co-host of Morning Joe, and he's the host of Sunday Today, or I think it's called Sunday Today. Anyway, that Willie Geist, who's in his mid-40s, his father, Bill Geist, Senior, in other words, William Geist Senior, was for many years a columnist for the New York Times, sort of local stuff, humor, and then he became a broadcaster, and he was on CBS, whatever their morning show is on Sunday, for years, About 8 years ago, he announced that he had Parkinson's, and he retired a few years ago, but he's still going strong. I believe he just wrote a book. The two William Geist just wrote a book together. Anyway, William Geist, the elder, wrote about David Mintz in the early 80s when Tofutti was going citywide. It wasn't just going to be in some little shops in Brooklyn and on the Upper West Side where the kosher people shopped, but it was going to go, I don't know, everywhere. And it is everywhere these days. But when I was shopping in the early 70s at David's store, for one thing, he had a truck, a van, because he was a caterer. He had a van that you saw all over the place, probably more than one van. And on the side it said, "Be a princess. Shop at Mintz's." I don't know why he thought that rhymed. Menachem Schneerson, the Rebbe, told him at some point in the early, mid-70s, he went to the Rebbe and he said, "Look, Rebbe, I'm trying to develop a dairy-free ice cream so that we kosher observance can eat ice cream right after a meat meal, because in if you follow the kashrus, certainly in that community, you have to wait 3 hours after a meat meal, a meal that features meat or poultry. You have to wait 3 hours before you can have ice cream. Now with Tofutti, a non-dairy product, you could eat ice cream for dessert immediately. So the Rebbe said to him, because you know what, David was just about to open another restaurant on the Upper West Side. I didn't even know he had restaurants on anywhere. I only knew about the catering. And he was about to open another restaurant on the Upper West Side. He went to the Rebbe and he said, "Should I do this?" And the Rebbe said, "Don't do it. Concentrate on your soy-based ice cream. It'll be a better bet for you. You'll make you rich." And it did. So maybe the Rebbe did know, but he may have just been, you know, a wise guy. I don't want to say that he was a prophet when he came to David Mintz's Tofutti, but in fact he was. So David went on to a great fame and riches, by the way, never left Brooklyn, became an extremely charitable person. I mean, he made a lot of money, and he gave a lot away, mainly to Orthodox Jewish charities. But that's okay. It helped people, but I always remember about Mintz's. I'm in there one day buying potato salad or something like that, and the woman, this older woman standing next to me. By the way, this was not this part of Flatbush was not at all orthodox in the 70s. It was already. Whoever was observant of kashrut in that neighborhood had been there quite a while. So the woman standing next to me at Mintz's, it was an older woman. I was only in my 20s. So who knows how old she really was? You know, who knows when you're 20-something? And she said, and I was buying, I think, potato salad. And she said, "It's not potato salad, young man." I said, "What is it?" She says, "It's gold." I said, "What do you mean it's gold?" She says, "Look at the price." Because the prices were so high at Mintz's. It was kosher. And, you know, it was not a kosher community. So compared to the non-kosher potato salad, it was very expensive. But I thought of all of this when I was about to make, but haven't yet done it, a keto-friendly dish of cauliflower mashed potatoes. Now, this is, if you go online, you're going to find a lot of recipes for cauliflower mashed potatoes. It, of course, it's not mashed potatoes, it's mashed cauliflower, and then you season it or make it sort of seem like it might be potatoes. As I said, I haven't tried it yet, but I did find the hint, the trick to actually making it sort of creamy, because I keep thinking, even if I puree cauliflower, it's still going to be grainy, not like mashed potato, not like smooth, creamy mashed potatoes. So the trick is cream cheese. Now, what made me think of this is, in David Mintz is that this is in the early to mid-70s, just about the time that Weight Watchers became popular and was being promoted heavily. There was another diet around, a sort of Weight Watcher diet. I don't remember what it was called, but David Mintz hooked on to this diet and was preparing foods that were on the diet so you could come in and buy already done. You didn't have to make your own cauliflower mashed potatoes. He made them for you. But he had dishes made with cauliflower, like cauliflower mashed potatoes. I don't know if he had cauliflower fried rice, which I have made recently several times now, and it's very good. It's not rice, but you know what? It's okay. It's a good thing. So on its own, it's a good thing. So I'm going to try the mashed potatoes, but it made me think of David Mintz. I couldn't help it. The people are making out like cauliflower mashed potatoes and cauliflower fried rice is some kind of newfangled thing, but I can date it back at least to the early 70s. And I have to go look. I have what must be the first Weight Watcher cookbook. I gotten rid of most of my Weight Watcher cookbooks. They kept coming out and coming out. But I think I did save the original. And in that book, I just now thought of this. It might be a recipe for cauliflower mashed potatoes. But it would be a dairy dish if you beat in some cream cheese. On the other hand, I do think there could even be a tofu-y cream cheese. There are other tofu products. Soy. By the way, even the word tofu back in the 70s was some kind of bizarre word and thing. People did not have a good impression of bean curd, tofu. Nowadays, you can find tofu in the most boring supermarket. They'll have five tofu products, including, let's not even talk about, soy milk. So anyway, that was David Mintz and cauliflower mashed potatoes. And this sort of brings me to what's in season. I'm thrilled because this is the time stuff is starting to grow from the ground, in my ground, and not just in Mexico and California. On the other hand, I am not Alice Waters. I do not have to have my strawberries grown in the backyard or down the road. I'm very happy if they're good strawberries and they're from Mexico or, as I'm getting them now, cheap. See, I always say, you know, when it's at high season, when the price plummets. And I found really good California strawberries the other day for only $2.99 a quart. Not the little pint size, but the big size, the pound, 16 ounces. $2.99, and they were great. Now, the last time I had a strawberry was back in February when they were terrible, but I was one, I mean, you know, I'm on this diet, and strawberries are like the best fruit to be on the keto diet. So we were eating strawberries almost up until Valentine's Day, and then I gave up on them. And then I said, oh, well, maybe for Valentine's Day, since everybody buys strawberries, maybe there's some good ones out there. But that was not true. There were no good ones. So there are wonderful strawberries in the market at a good price. There are really great asparagus in the market at a good price. I've been buying asparagus. And we've been eating asparagus like every other day, every which way. On this diet, I can have hollandaise sauce. But I have to say that the most asparagus-y tasting asparagus are ones that I either roast, if I feel like turning the oven on, or sauté. If I don't feel like turning the oven on, what I do is I cut them on an angle, sort of like penne, and although it could be double angle, meaning like a trapezoid shape, and sauté them very quickly in either butter or olive oil. You don't even have to season them with anything but salt and pepper, but you could. You could put a little garlic in there if you really wanted to. I wouldn't put chopped garlic or sliced garlic. I would just put a piece of garlic. A clove of garlic, lightly smashed under my hand in the oil, and let that cook for a few minutes before I add the asparagus. Or shallot, that's a very good combination with asparagus. And by the way, somewhere shallots are in season because I've been buying those pretty inexpensively too. Spinach, now even in Sharon, Connecticut, there should be spinach coming out of the ground already, or if not, any minute. My reports from Philadelphia up to Pittsfield are that everything is at least a week early this year. So I would guess that this week or next, you're going to get lots of greens. I don't know what other greens people are growing, but spinach for sure. And for me, this is the best spinach of the year, the spring spinach. Also, I love spring zucchini, and I've been getting really sweet zucchini. Now, this is not in season, eggplant, but here's something that I've made twice this week, and each one of the, it's a tian, or in Italian, they don't make these much in Italy, but there is one place I know that does. You would call it a tiello. Tian and tiello refer to the ceramic pan that this vegetable dish is made in. And then the dish that's made it in is also called a tian or a tiello. And I made it with, in a loaf pan. I have this wonderful ceramic loaf pan that I bought literally 45 years ago in, it's Bennington Pottery. I don't think they make the loaf pan anymore, but if they do, buy one. It's great. It's great for meatloaf. But I use it, there are two elements to this dish. There's the oil element, which I make with a grated garlic, a third of a cup of olive oil. You could squeeze it down to a quarter of a cup, but I'm not afraid of olive oil. A third of a cup of olive oil, two large cloves of garlic, and I've been grating them into the oil with my microplane held right over the measuring cup with the oil. Works very well. If you don't want to do that, you can mince the garlic. If you don't want to put it in the oil, you don't have to. You can just put pinches of the garlic on each layer. So I line my ceramic loaf pan with aluminum foil so that I can easily get this thing unmolded in the end. By the way, next time I make it, I made it again yesterday. I'm going to serve it today. The next time I make it, which I'm sure I will, I'm going to make it without the foil to see if I can. So much oil, I figure I probably can unmold it without the foil. But I must say, the foil makes it really easy. So I put in I brush the foil with my garlicky oil. And then I put in a layer of eggplant. And I buy an eggplant that is medium-ish, that is about the same diameter at its widest point as my loaf pan, so that I can put a full slice of eggplant on the bottom. Oh, I forgot to say that I do salt the eggplant. I slice it about half-inch thick and slice it. Usually get about 6 slices out of that, maybe 7. You can use the ends. I don't peel the eggplant, except I do peel the ends. Because it's all skin on one side, so I peel off some of the skin on the skinny side, and I lay them out on a rack, and I salt them both sides, and then I do the same thing with two medium zucchini that I've also sliced, maybe a third of an inch thick, half an inch thick, quarter, anyway, not too thick, and not too thin. I get from a zucchini, I can probably get 4 slices per zucchini. So, and I also salt them, and I let them stand a minimum a half an hour, but usually I go out and do something, and so it could be for an hour and a half. You will see, they give off a lot of moisture that you don't want in your final dish. And then I just blot them with a paper towel, and I put the layer of eggplant on the bottom, and if I have to cut a piece of eggplant to make it fit, I do, so that I have a full bottom layer of eggplant. Brush it with some of the oil. I now season it with, the first time I made it, I seasoned it with leaves of basil. Yesterday's I made with pinches of oregano, which I think is more practical. But, you know, coming up, we're going to have lots of basil, so you can use the basil. I would not combine them. And then a layer of roasted, I have 2 red peppers that I roasted, peeled, filleted, I call it. And then a layer of roasted pepper, then a layer of very thinly sliced onion, 1 medium onion for the whole thing, then a layer of zucchini. I'm putting oil and pinches of, this is garlicky oil, and pinches of oregano on every layer, every other layer, the oregano. I put in a little bit of salt, because even though I salted the vegetables, I found in the end it needed a little bit more salt, so I added a little bit of salt, some of the layers, and pepper, freshly ground pepper. And I ended up filling the pan, pretty much. Fold over the aluminum, and if you have any extra oil at the end, just pour it over the top. And then fold the foil over the top of the tian and put it in a 400-degree oven for an hour and a half. Seems like a long time, but it's not. And it will be nice and bubbly and somewhat flattened when you take it out at an hour and a half. And then with your nice spatula, wide hamburger turner type spatula, just push it all down. And that said, I covered it, yeah. I uncovered it for like the last 15 minutes only because I wanted to take a peek at what it looked like. And then I didn't want to put the paper back. It looked great. So that's it. And then you squish it down a bit and let it cool to at least, you know, warm, and then refrigerate it overnight. So it's a great thing, but by the way, it's very festive looking because it's layers of vegetables, and anything you put in layers looks festive, I think. And then if you've made a nice layer on the bottom, it'll have a very attractive layer on the top when you unmold it. But if you wanted to serve this just as a vegetable, all you have to do is cut it into slices. We ate it the first day. We ate it. It was cool. It was out of the refrigerator, and maybe 20 minutes later, we ate it. The second day, I let it come to room temperature, and it was better. It's better when it's not cold. But on the other hand, it's a nice cold dish, too. If you really want to make a warm dish, you can. I would not make it a hot dish, but I would definitely let it come to, especially in the summer, let it come to room temperature, which is going to be 80-ish, not cold at all, and then you could top it with a tomato sauce, or bottom it, meaning make a pool of tomato sauce on a platter and put this on top of the platter, and then as you slice it, you can spoon a little of the tomato sauce over each. I would not slice this thin, by the way. You have to slice this at least, I would say, 2 inches. 2 inches, I think, is your minimum slice here, which means that you get 4 ample portions out of this 2 zucchini, 1 eggplant, 2 red peppers, an onion, herb. It's really good. It's better than really good. It's fabulous.
Sounds good.
So I made it again yesterday. And last week we had it with as a side dish also. We had it as a side dish to a roast leg of lamb. I'm eating very well on this diet, I have to say. If you're willing to cook, you can do very well on this, even without the carbohydrates. And one of the things I'm looking for today in the market is I'm hoping that string beans, or I call them string beans because when I was a kid they were string beans and they had strings. Now people know them as green beans. And by the way, I recently bought green beans because I wanted to make this dish that I'm going to tell you about now. And they did have strings. I would say a good number of them had strings. I wondered about that. But hardly ever. When I both top and bottom my beans, meaning I take off the stem end and I clip off that little tail. I just don't like the texture of it. There's no reason you have to. In fact, I would say that most chefs these days, which irritates me, do not take that off. Anyway, string beans should be in the market at a good price in any minute. And I will never forget my grandfather once coming home in probably about this time of year. He was an electrical contractor. He came home. Some client of his gave him a half bushel of string beans. And he said to my grandmother, "I don't know what you're going to do with these, but, you know, I think you should probably cook them." And she said, "Oh, you're going to be eating vegetarian chopped liver for weeks now." So, in fact, we didn't mind because we all love what I call vegetarian chopped liver, and my grandmother did. And it has nothing to do with liver. And in my grandmother's day, except that my grandmother didn't always follow the dictums of her day, everybody made vegetarian chopped liver with canned string beans, because they were the proper gray color to look like liver, I think. So it was totally novel for my grandmother to make vegetarian chopped liver with fresh string beans, but I do. I put 2 pounds, but they have to be cooked very well. I think I've been through this before. This is one of my favorite recipes from Jewish home cooking. And I made it just a couple weeks ago, and we did eat it for 3 days. 2 pounds of string beans will last Bob Harnett and Arthur Schwartz 3 days. And 2 pounds of string beans, they must be well cooked. Not as cooked as canned string beans, but I would say 8 to 10 minutes in already a large quantity of boiling water so that the water doesn't stop boiling when you put them in, and then 8 to 10 minutes, count 8 to 10 minutes, drain them, don't bother refreshing them, let them cool with their own heat, and they will be the right consistency in the end, and dry enough. They must be extremely dry. So for that, I use 5 eggs, hard-cooked eggs, 4 medium onions. That's more than a pound of onions, caramelized. So fried in some oil. Don't use butter for this. Use vegetable oil of some kind. Not olive oil either. And fried onions and a cup of walnuts. And these ingredients just go, the onion, fried onions, cooked string beans, walnuts, and hard-cooked eggs, salt and pepper, of course, get processed, usually in 2 or 3 batches, in a food processor, until they are processed enough to, you know, not mushy, but, you know, chopped liver consistency. And, by the way, in my house, we didn't like really pureed chopped liver. I grew up with a slightly coarser chopped liver than you get in most delicatessens, for instance. And so I don't mind if every once in a while I have to bite into a little walnut. Anyway, it's really great stuff. And I'm just waiting for the string beans now. And that's My Week by Arthur Schwartz, cooking in season, no matter where it comes from. It, by the way, it is the moment of Alice Waters, apparently, because she was not only in the crossword puzzle yesterday, in the Sunday Times crossword puzzle. I don't know how they coordinate this, but this cannot be coincidence, that she was a clue, and by the way, an erroneous clue. I knew exactly who they were talking about, but the clue is Chef Waters, who pioneered the organic food movement. She did not, emphatically did not, pioneer the organic food movement. And if you read the interview with her at the front of the magazine, you'll see that she did not pioneer the organic food movement. I can credit Alice with a number. Alice is a friend of mine, or at least she used to be. We haven't seen each other in a number of years. She used to come to Brooklyn to go to the Green Market, and of course everybody would cluster around her. Apparently she's living with her daughter Fanny. I know a lot about Alice. Fanny is named for, now I'm not going to remember the name of the French novelist who wrote the Fanny books, but I do remember that it was a movie with Leslie Caron, Maurice Chevalier, Horst Buchholz, and now I'm forgetting who the actor who plays Horst Buchholz's father, another famous European actor. So that was the Fanny I know. And then apparently she's living with her daughter, who must be in her 30s by now, Fanny Singer. So there, anyway, you should read the interview in the Times. It's a very, I think, revealing interview, revealing that, you know, Alice is a modest person, actually. She would never claim to be the pioneer of the organic movement. I knew 2 of the pioneers of the organic movement. Gaylord Houser, who died at age 99 or 100 from, you could say, from eating right. Gaylord Houser was sort of the nutritionist health guru to the stars in the Hollywood of the 1920s and 30s. His most famous client was probably Greta Garbo. But Gaylord Houser was a grand old guy, and I interviewed him early in my career in the 1970s. And the other one, the other pioneer of the organic movement and of the health food movement, and these both these people were considered by some people quacks in their day, the other one was Adele Davis. I also interviewed Adele Davis early in my career, and then she died. Adele died in her, I think, early mid-60s, and it was not long after Adele died. And Adele Davis and Gaylord Houser were friends. I got to interview Gaylord Houser, and I said, well, how do we explain Adele Davis's early death? And she said, his first response was, she was a very unhappy person. Cancer attacks unhappy people. That was his belief. So he must have been very happy to live to 100.
All right.
I have to say, this one thing that irked me about the Alice Waters interview was that she's her whole thing, and it's been like her whole thing for 40 years, is that pleasure is being taken out of our relationship to food. And Alice herself is guilty of this, because she recalls, or the interviewer recounts the story that her daughter tells of her the daughter coming home with blueberries that she had faked as organic, and Alice, the mama, said these can't be local organic blueberries because they're not in season now, and she threw them away. She put them in the compost heap. I'm sorry. That's taking pleasure away.
It certainly is.
Yes, that's denying pleasure. I'm not eating those blueberries because they're not from Berkeley. They're from Arizona.
All right. And on that note.
On that note, I will say have a happy cooking week.
And we will speak to you.
And find pleasure in your food.
That's it. And we'll speak to you on Memorial Day Monday.
Oh. And I will be in Philadelphia, so you'll have to call me on another line. But I'll be there for you.
All right. Thanks, Arthur.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robinhood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.